This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
The world doesn't need another sports show. It needs an awesome sports show. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigobon. Joining me as usual in studio, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you?
Great, Wally. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great. Thanks. Also joining in this... Joining us this morning, former Washington Capital, Toronto Maple Leaf, Leapin' Lou Franceschetti. Good morning, Lou. How are you?
Morning, gentlemen. Great morning to be alive.
certainly is. Gentlemen, interesting week in Leafs land.
We're going to talk about that, eh, Walt?
I guess we are. Before we get to that, it's a major championship Sunday. The PGA Championships being played down in Oak Hill in Rochester, New York, about an hour away from the Canadian border. And fittingly enough, Corey Connors, the pride of Listowel, Ontario, is going to be in the final group and going to be butting heads with Brooks Koepka this afternoon. And we certainly wish him all the best. And it's a major championship Sunday. And we always have with us from Global Golf Post, good friend of ours, John Steinbreder. He'll be joining us shortly after the first break. Later on in the hour, we have Butch Carter, former Raptors coach. I'm going to talk some basketball, and we'll pay some homage to one of the greats of all time who left us this week, Jim Brown. Looking forward to that. Naz, I don't know exactly how we want to get into this, but last Sunday morning we were mourning the Leafs' quick exit from the second round against a motivated Florida Panthers team.
They're still motivated,
and they're certainly motivated from their $10 million goalie, Serge Bobrovsky.
He's earning his money now, for sure, right?
He sure is. He's Florida's doing to Carolina what they did to the Leafs. It seems like exactly the same thing. But let's get it back to the Leafs. We knew that there was some discussion about whether Kyle Dubas's contract was going to be renewed. We knew that there was some discussion about whether Sheldon Keefe was going to be back. We knew that all of those deliberations were going to happen. And we thought that there would be a clear, thought-out, well-delineated decision, a usual corporate decision coming from coming down from the board at MLSE, from the Rogers people, from the Bell people, from Larry Tannenbaum, passed down to Shanahan, or Shanahan presumably making that decision and then getting approval for it. But things didn't go according to plan this week, Naz, and I think it all started with Dubas's, Kyle's, press conference on Monday, which sort of shocked a lot of people, and then it just seemed to have deteriorated from there the rest of the week between Kyle, between his agent, between Brendan, ultimately ending up with him not being renewed on Friday. So let's start off on Monday. Or if you want to start off on Friday, Naz, let me get your reaction. Lou, then we'll get you involved, and then we'll break it down. Your reaction to what transpired this week,
Naz?
Well,
I think they're both a bunch of babies, really, and don't like what I saw, for sure. Shanahan, there's going to be a shoe to be dropped here, and it's going to be Shanahan, I think, is next. I can't see MLSC putting up with this, really.
You think that shoe's going to drop fairly soon, or they're going to let Brendan... play out his contract?
I think it's going to happen soon. I really do.
Okay. Interesting analysis there. I'll come back to you on that point, Naz. But Lou, your general overall impressions about the performance this week of Dubas, Brendan Shanahan, and MLSE?
Well, you know what? Naz couldn't have put it any better. couldn't have put it any better, a bunch of babies. And it goes right down to the organization and the way they play the game. But I look at it, and if you keep track of how many times they scroll up to the box there, Shanahan, years gone by, has always been next to Dubas. If you look back at this year, there was hardly one time that Shanahan, especially down the stretch and in the playoffs, that Shanahan was next to Dubas in the in their box. So I really think, like Naz is thinking, that the other shoe right now is going to fall. Obviously, and reading this morning that Pittsburgh actually wants permission to talk to Dubas about their vacant GM job. So I think this is more or less, this has been in the plans for a while. And as we all say, maybe Brendan Shanahan did the politically right thing to what he was saying. But at the end of the day, there's a lot more going on in this with both of them, power struggle, whatever you want to call it. Dubas probably going in and saying, I want full control of who I hire as a coach. Maybe Shanahan didn't want Keith back and player personnel.
I think I want to pick up on a couple of points there. I don't think we know all the facts, obviously. There's spin in these types of situations. Spin comes out of various camps, and we certainly got a detailed blow-by-blow description from Brendan Shanahan on Friday afternoon, which I found a bit surprising. They don't normally get into that level of detail, detailing every...
That's the most I've heard from him in 10 years.
You don't normally get into that level of detail in that type of press conference. I found that surprising. I found Dubas's press conference surprising as well. So the leaks, the what's coming out so far seems to be mostly from Shanahan's perspective. Kyle and his agent Chris Armstrong, neither one of whom is stupid, both are considered very bright young men. They really haven't come out and commented yet, and I suspect that they won't until such time as Kyle lands on his feet somewhere. It's never a great idea for an employee or a general manager to, for lack of a better term, badmouth his previous employer. That's usually not, doesn't look great on a resume if you're looking for a job somewhere else. So I suspect that there's going to be the cone of silence from Dubas and his agent until he lands on his feet somewhere. And then I think slowly over time, we'll get to the truth of actually what happened. In terms of your comments of how they acted, I'm not so sure I would use the specific term, but it was certainly theater this week. You want to call it theater of the absurd? I don't know what you want to call it, but didn't look good. I don't think it looked good on any of the players in this. I didn't think Kyle came out looking great out of this. I didn't think Brendan came out looking great. MLSE, I have to believe that whatever moves Brendan made, he would have discussed it with somebody higher up. I just have that sense that he didn't make a decision. His first decision was to hire Kyle back. And then as the week transpired, specifically apparently on Wednesday or whatever, when it seems what's being reported is that Kyle and his agent up their demands, money-wise and power-wise, then Brendan had a change of heart. And I don't know what the truth is in all of this. We're about to find out. But I somehow doubt that, at the beginning of the week, Kyle started off by, having that press conference telling us all how difficult the job it is to be the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, how much of an impact it has on his family, and saying he didn't know whether he wanted to continue. I don't think that went over well with Brendan, and I guess the week just sort of deteriorated from there, Naz. Your thoughts on Kyle getting up there and sort of not, sort of suggesting maybe I don't want to do this job. I don't know what kind of a...
He thought it was too much pressure for him. Right?
Yeah, I don't know if you didn't think that being a general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs is a pressure job. That's stating the obvious. He's been there for 5 years, and that's what he's getting paid for. But it doesn't usually good. You know, if you're doing a job interview and you're telling your employer, I don't know if I can handle the pressure, that's usually not a good thing, is it, Ness?
No, it's not. And I'm told he got offered $4 million and then he counteroffered for $7 million. That's a big, big difference.
Yeah,
$3 million in this whole thing. And I think Shanahan got really upset when that happened, right?
Yeah, but then you get into, he's negotiating, right? We don't know all the facts. And I guess at some point in time, the facts come out. And Lou, we had a discussion the other day. You don't think it was just about the money. You think it was more about some last second grasp for a little bit more power from Kyle. Is that your theory?
I think it is, only because I know Kyle and Sheldon are so close, and he probably wanted one more go around with Sheldon as a head coach. So I could see probably one way or the other, Kyle saying, "Okay, listen, I'll come back, but I want this much power." And then, at the beginning of the week, he's saying, "Well, my family was really affected by what went on this year. So why are you actually going to take this job if your family is still going to be affected?" After they talk, and now there's rumors, and there was rumors 2 weeks ago that Kyle had one foot out the door and one foot in Pittsburgh. Is it going to be a lot easier in Pittsburgh than it is in Toronto? Probably. But at the end of the day, we will find out sooner or later what went on. And I think Kyle will more or less spill his beans on his relationship, not with MLSC, but I think his relationship with Brendan Shanahan over the last year.
Yeah, I think my theory is that obviously this bubbled over. This didn't just arise, you know, at the end of the season. They've probably had difficulties between them all year, and they've probably butted heads on a lot of decisions over the course of the year. And, Shanahan probably saw the team one way and Dubas saw the team the other way. And ultimately, you know, Shanahan's the boss, isn't he? And it's, you know, it's not good for career longevity in your position if you're pissing the boss off. And he did that on Monday. Whether he did it on purpose or whether it just happened by accident, whether it was a tactic, nobody knows. I thought Kyle was being genuine. I mean, he seemed emotional during the interview. And, yeah, being the Leafs general manager has got a lot of pressure and it's got a lot of effect on your family. But if you want to come back, you better show the boss that you're 100%, that you're committed to it, that, you know, that you're not having second thoughts. I didn't understand why he would say that in a press conference. He was just being honest. I mean, to be quite frank with you, he's being honest. And that's, you know that you don't expect that. You don't expect honesty. You expect certain corporate speak. You know, these guys are programmed to talk in certain ways, and they didn't talk in the normal ways. And I found that a little bit striking, that they actually said what was on their mind and didn't deflect questions and didn't sort of take the diplomatic doublespeak that they normally do. They were just being honest out there. And, man, it made for some interesting theater this week. But let's get back. You know, Kyle's gone. I said before it all happened, when the Leafs lost, we've all had criticisms of Kyle. We've all patted him on the back at certain points in time. We certainly patted him on the back with some of the moves he made at trade deadline. And as the playoff series with Florida progressed and also with Tampa, we sort of realized maybe this team isn't constructed the way it needs to be to win the Stanley Cup. So he's received some positive feedback. He's also received some negative ones. But overall, there were a lot of people who didn't even want Kyle to come back. They wanted a fresh direction. And I'm not terribly disappointed that Kyle's gone. I would have wished it would have happened in a better way. But I do think this team may thrive from new direction, both in the GM category and also in the coach category. Naz, and then I'll turn over to Lou.
The relationship must not have been good because Kyle emailed Shanahan about accepting the job. You don't email if you're close. You're on the phone. You get on the phone and talk to the guy if you're close. And that's a problem for sure.
Well, it seemed obvious that their relationship seemed strained over the course of last year. Lou, let's talk about the end result of all of this. Kyle Dubas is no longer the general manager. I want to be sensitive to Sheldon Keefe. He's in a very difficult position right now. He doesn't know what his future looks like, but his future looks tenuous. And I just hope that if the Leafs are going to move on from Sheldon Keefe, which, you know, a new general manager probably will. I don't like to, you know, this is Sheldon Keefe as a human being. This is his employment. This is how he feeds his family. I don't like to speculate about these things, but I just hope MLSE is fair to him. If they're going to move on from him, they should do it sooner rather than later. But overall, Lou, are the Leafs, given that Dubas is not around and Keefe and Keefe's position questionable, are the Leafs moving in the right direction, which is the real issue here?
Well, you know what? They definitely have to do something within the next 2 weeks. And, you know, Brendan Shanahan signed off on every deal that Dubas made. And Kyle has put this organization, really, they've got their hands tied now because they've got this July 1st deadline that certain players will have the team over a barrel if they don't make decisions by July 1st. So I look at probably a GM being hired within the next 2 weeks and then giving them 1 month to more or less clean up a lot of the mess that Kyle made, but Shanahan signed off on. Because obviously everything with Shanny being Kyle's boss, he had to sign off on every deal and every money going out. So the problem with the salary cap is that Kyle has put us in a lot of trouble. Now, if we can get that straightened out within the next 4 weeks, I think we're going to be okay. But there have to be some moves made. And again, the only guy that's out there right now with experience, and they want experience, is Brad Treveling from Calgary, because he has been put in a position like Calgary as a hotbed.
Yeah, Stan Bowman's another one, if he gets permission, Lou, but that's it. You're right. There's not too much experience out there, and it's going to be tough.
Yeah,
really,
I mean,
tough.
We're talking about Stan Bowman and also the other gentleman out there, Joe Quenneville, and they're going to be talking. Quenneville's in talking to Bettman. I think Quenneville's a great coach. I think Stan Bowman would be a good general manager. I can't see any scenario whatsoever where MLSE would even get anywhere near the sensitivity of bringing in Stan Bowman and Joel Quenneville. That decision's not going to be made based on their qualifications as coaches or general manager. I just don't think they need the PR nightmare that will probably... Somebody's going to have to take a little bit of a PR hit when you bring Bowman and Quenneville back. At some point in time, they are going to come back. I don't think the way the Maple Leafs, the MLSE operates, that they're going to go anywhere near that. I just doubt it. Although I think Quenneville might be the perfect coach for
Keefe
this team.
Sheldon Keefe has a checkered past, and they went through that.
Yeah.
Right? What's to say they can't do it with Bowman?
Well, somebody's
we're bringing Mike Babcock back. Basically, when you're bringing Quenneville, there's the similar coaches, right? And you have Lou Lamoriello.
How about Gerald Gallant in New York? I mean, you got to decide. This is a decision for the general manager. Depends on his character and his attitude and how he wants to approach these players and what type of skill set and what type of character he wants from his coach. You want a tough guy? You want a communicator? You want a psychologist? What do you want? And then based on that type of analysis, then you go out and find somebody, and we'll see what happens. Anyways, we'll continue this topic, obviously.
Hey Wally,
yeah.
I'll throw one name out there, okay?
Yeah.
Andrew Brunette.
Interesting.
Look what he did with Florida last year after Quenneville got fired.
Yeah.
As a coach. Not as a GM, but as a coach.
As a coach. Yeah, interesting.
Okay.
Interesting name. There's going to be a lot of interesting names, a lot of interesting GMs, and they've got a short time period to figure it all out. Should be an interesting month in Maple Leafs Nation. Anyways, we've got to go to break, and we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit of golf with our good friend John Steinbreder. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville declared, "We'll never be the fastest. We'll never be the cheapest. We'll never be the snazziest dressed."
What?
Yeah, my point is, we want to be the best. At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone-baked, the traditional Italian way.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
Are they ever wrong about sports? I can answer that in two words. Impossible. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740 in downtown Toronto, 96.7 FM. Live video and audio streaming on the internet, www.zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, senior editor at Global Golf Post, our good friend. It's a major championship Sunday, and who better to discuss that with than John Steinbreder. John, good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm fantastic. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. John, the big story in Southern Ontario and across, a big golf story for us this morning is, of course, Corey Connors being in the last group for the PGA Championship. Good Canadian boy from Listowel, Ontario. It was a miserable day down in Oak Hill yesterday. It was cold and drizzly. Rochester's an hour from the Canadian border. It's a lot of Canadians down there. And Corey Connors playing in that kind of weather, it's almost like he had home ice advantage, for lack of a better term. But certainly we're thrilled about a good Canadian boy potentially, you know, fighting for a major. It's been a long time. And on the men's side, we've got, of course, the great success of Brooke Henderson on the women's side. But men's wise, it's been a long time since Mike Weir donned that green jacket. So we're thrilled up here. We hope things go this afternoon. John, your reaction to the PGA Championship down in Oak Hill, and got some live guys that are stirring up a little bit of negative sentiment, getting some boos. But Brooks Koepka, he's a major type of guy. DeChambeau's he's in the mix of it, and should be a fascinating afternoon of golf. John,
it should be a lot of fun. I can't wait. I mean, it's more football weather than it is golf weather, it seems, and in parts of the Masters are that way as well. So maybe these guys in Los Angeles will get a nice, calm, warm 4 days of golf. They can't count on it, certainly, at the Open Championship this year at Hoyle Lake either. So it's tough conditions once again, but great tournament, great leaderboard. Love to see your guy from Canada up there at the top. Really exciting stuff for Canada, especially with Oak Hill being so close to the border there and so many Canadians in attendance there. So, I mean, that's fantastic and a great story for golf. And hard not to root for Corey. And in his day-to-day. And interesting about the boy, and you and I have talked about this when I was down in Augusta. We were chatting then about, you know, there's such stringent rules at Augusta about how you behave in the crowd and the gallery, and people down there were very, very good. And I really didn't hear any incidents at all. And it was certainly something that I thought would happen. I think Augusta guys were a little concerned about it too, just given that the fan base here is so traditional in general and probably not taking kindly to some of the comments and the antics of the LIV guys. But it was pretty calm down there, so I'm not surprised in a way that in a place that's a little less stringent about that sort of behavior and people can still scream mashed potatoes and somebody hits a drive, that the people were expressing their sentiments to some of these LIV guys. And again, I think more than anything else, it just has to be with their attitudes or their complaints, their constant whining about stuff. Certain, not all of them, but certain of them. And, you know, interestingly, here we have, once again, Brooks Koepka, one of those LIV guys at the top of the leaderboard. And he's not been one of those guys who's sort of alienated others with his Sergio Garcia-esque complaints. And so I think he's great to have there. People root for him. I was really enjoying watching him in Augusta and how he played so well after not being around for so long and going through those terrible injuries and whatnot. And I kind of found myself enjoying his run there and his play. And I think it'll be great to have him there again. And I'm excited about that. Deschambeau, I mean, who knows? He's had more body changes in the Incredible Hulk over the last 2 years and more personality changes in Civil. So, I mean, we have no idea what to expect from Deschambeau. I guess he had I heard, and I didn't see it on TV, but I guess he had a Ryder Cup umbrella out yesterday, which is kind of funny. I don't know what that's, you know, begging for some consideration for that. But he's, you know, it's hard to see how he's going to do. And I get back to this thing. When was the last time that Deschambeau had to play and compete and contend in a 72-hole stroke play event? And it's been a while. So, yeah. You know, I still throw that out as not sure about his chances. And I like Victor Hovland a lot. He was great to watch at Augusta. His absolutely garish, attire notwithstanding. And it's going to be a really fun group there. And you got Scheffler and Rose as well, tied for fifth right behind those guys. And then Rory playing with, and we got to talk about him later, Michael Block, the club.
Michael Block, who's amazing.
What a freaking story about that. I mean, that's incredible. So,
well, on that note, you got to John, you got to explain to our listeners the Michael Block story. It is a unique feature of the PGA Championship, as the club pros can actually So, why don't you explain to our listeners why Michael Block's such a big story?
Sure. I mean, what they do every year with the PGA. Has a club professional championship, and they had it, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks ago. And the top 20 in that get invited to play in the PGA Championship. And usually it's really just sort of an acknowledgement of job well done, guys. You're at the top of your profession as far as playing, and have a great time. And you know, you can stay around and watch the final 2 days of play because you're not going to be making the cut, probably. And to have a PGA club professional, and Block talked about this, where he spends half his days having accountants tell him how to run a tournament or grow grass, or, you know, some lawyer telling him how to cook a better hamburger, you know, at his club, and giving lessons to kids and everything else. I mean, here he is, comes in, he's shot even par 3 days in a row. He's even par for the tournament, then obviously tied for eighth, playing with Rory McIlroy today.
Remarkable.
I mean, you know, just it couldn't be more, exciting for him and more unusual for all of us. I mean, there were times years ago, Bob Ford, the great golf professional from Oakmont and Seminole, Bob played in, you know, PGAs and U.S. Opens, and even then that was a little bit of a stretch, but Bob was... the difference between Bob and the great touring pros in those days was not nearly as great as it is today, just from a mental standpoint, from all the things that you have to deal with and whatnot. And to see Block do this, see Michael do this, is just extraordinary and great fun. I think people up there have been having a blast with him.
I just get one last word on that one. I'll turn it over to Naz. Michael Block charges $150 per lesson at his home club in California. I think he deserves a little bit of a raise. I think the demand for his services is going to dramatically increase. So,
well, his paycheck won't be too bad.
His paycheck here, but I think he's due for a little bit of a raise on his lessons. Naz, I'll turn it over to you.
John, the weather has been questionable, and they switched from August to May. Why did they do that?
Well, the thing is they had already committed to Oak Hill for the PGA this year championship. So when they did that, they had to honor that commitment and then stay with Oak Hill in May. And I think there are a variety of reasons why they did that. I think, one, it took a lot of courses out of play in the U.S. for having a PGA championship. I think August was just a slower month. And the thinking was that May, without a major championship there, that would just be a better time to do this, attract more attention. You could go to more places. I just think there were different thoughts about that as to why. And, it's not a bad move, except that, you know, with, again, having Oak Hill on the schedule for May, we all know, I live in Connecticut and our weather is beautiful today, but it was miserable yesterday. And I'm not that far north, and Oak Hill is a lot farther north. It's just, you know, it's too bad, and this will be the last one of those northern sort of events that get the PGA. I mean, you know, the same thing with Kohler. I mean, Kohler's not going to have a PGA again probably because it's just too dicey trying to think that the course is going to be in good enough shape in May, and A, and then B, that you could have decent enough weather, you know, to have it play and not play like an open championship can sometimes with the wind and the rain and cold and whatnot. So I think this is the last time we'll see something like this happen, and that's good, and it's sad because Oak Hill is such a great venue, as is, you know, Straits Course at the Kohler. But they'll sort out ways. They'll get themselves into other rotas for other major championships, I'm sure.
Oh, I just get the U.S. Open back at Oak Hill on Father's Day. Anyways, Lou, I'll turn it over to you really quickly.
Yeah, John, I think, like Wally was saying, they're good. Probably going to ask for a hike and his lessons. I think they're probably going to have a Buffalo Bills mafia that are going to follow him today. And there might be a club that is going to charge him to get into that. But anyways, watching it over the last 3 days, what's happened to DeChambeau? He's gone through a physical fitness thing. Looking back a few years ago, weighed about 240. He looks as young and as slim as he did when he first broke into the PGA.
I mean, it's great. I just don't understand these guys sometimes. And I was sort of fascinated with DeChambeau. But why is it that somebody will win, you know, a major tournament, or they'll, you know, with DeChambeau, with his great winning the U.S. Amateur and doing so well, and he's doing so great on the tour, and then he just comes out and he decides, well, I need to do this differently. I mean, Rory chased it too. Rory chased distance for a while, and DeChambeau, I mean, I remember being at the Masters one year and watching him, and he was just sitting there when he was all bulked up, and he was like, well, I can make this a par 68 for me by reaching all these par fives and two or whatever it was, and he's on the range and he's hitting balls rapid fire one after another, and guys are sitting around there. I remember Vijay was standing next to him and somebody else, and they stopped hitting balls themselves and just were watching them and sort of chortling at the spectacle. So I don't know what he's thinking about. He's such a good player, and he's much better off, obviously, being the size that he is, and it just seems to make more sense. So I don't know what his thinking was before. You do well, you win something, and why do you change it when you're doing so well and change your body that dramatically? But maybe he'll stay here in this spot, but he just seems to be one of those twitchy guys with a lot of smarts, and it's just never quite good enough for him. He's always looking around and tweaking and fiddling and trying to figure out how to do something differently or better.
We've been talking to John Steinbreder. John, senior editor at Global Golf Post, one of the great digital, one of the great golf publications. I highly encourage you to seek him out. He's got some great books that he's written, one of the golf's acclaimed journalist. John, we can thank you so much. We'll catch up with you again on U.S. Open Sunday. It's going out west this year, L.A., if I'm not mistaken.
Los Angeles Country Club, one of the great spots in American golf, and really unknown as a major venue. They had the Walker Cup there recently, but it's going to be great competition and a great chance to see that wonderful. Well, there are two courses here, but the one that they'll be playing the Open on, that'll be a lot of fun.
John, you know how much we always appreciate catching up golf. You always know how much passion we share for golf, and it's always a distinct pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. And just after this call, I'm absolutely rooting for Corey this afternoon. So, Canada, let's make it happen.
That's the spirit,
John. Thanks so much, John. We really appreciate
it. All the best. Cheers. Yeah.
John Steinbrenner. On that note, we're going to take in Corey Connors.
Have you ever seen an embedded ball like he hit on 16?
They couldn't find it.
Trap. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. There was some criticism over the those slopes of the bunkers, and you know, I played a few courses, not like Oak Hill. I mean, you know, when you play golf on they're not, you know, when you play recreationally, it's when you play PGA golf it's a totally different sport. The courses are set up and they're
Isn't it funny that these guys have problems with certain holes, and he
some golfers have certain problems with certain courses. It just
Connors can't play 16.
He's got to have to figure out a new strategy. Yeah. Anyways, he's the pride of Listowel, Ontario, and we wish him all the best this afternoon.
And he's a Leaf fan too.
And he's a Leaf fan. Good for him. We're going to go to break. We'll come back. We're going to talk with former Raptors coach Butch Carter. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day in Pizzaville when my wife accused me of having an affair. How could I tell her that I was hopelessly in love with extra thin crust pizza from Pizzaville? I didn't ask for this to happen. It was so thin, so delicate, so delicious. I can't bear to share it with my wife. She wants me to see a counsellor, but I don't want to share it with him either. Call Pizzaville for an extra thin crust pizza at 736-3636.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
They never argue sports. They just explain while they're always correct. The boys are back. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740, downtown Toronto, 96.7 FM. Live video and auto streaming on the internet, zoomerradio.ca. We are hoping to have Butch Carter here this morning. It's live radio. Sometimes you can't connect. Sometimes the cell signals aren't the best. We will keep trying. And the one thing I did want to talk to Butch about, and I think we'd be remiss if we didn't entertain this discussion, it was the passing this week of Jim Brown. Jim Brown, in many quarters, is the greatest football player of all time. Broke a lot of barriers I have an interesting Jim Brown story, but you look at Jim Brown's career. We saw a lot of him in the early 1960s. If you grew up in the 50s, late 50s, 60s, when we used to watch NFL football on Sunday afternoons, we always used to get the Cleveland Browns on Channel 4. WBEN? I don't think it's still called that, is it, Ness?
I think it is still.
Or is it WIVB? I don't
know. WIVB.
Yeah, it used to be
like
WBEN back in the 60s. It used to have the Cleveland Browns always on at 1 o'clock. That would be the game. And then that was the NFL game on CBS. And then at 4 o'clock, it was always the Cowboys or the Packers or the 49ers. And on Channel 2, NBC, it was always the Bills. And so in the mid-60s, we got to see Jim Brown quite a bit on those great Cleveland Browns teams. Some of the players on those teams, like Paul Warfield. And who can forget Lou the Toe Groza, Naz? You remember Lou
the
Toe Groza?
Yeah.
But Jim Brown, 9 season, retired early.
29 years old,
9 seasons in the NFL, led the league in rushing 8 times. Think about that one for a while. A complicated legacy, had some issues in his personal life, but from his professional perspective as a professional football player, certainly always discussed as one of the great football players of all time. Naz?
Well, what a great football player he was, and he quit at 29 years old, which is young for a running back or a football player back then, and became a movie star. And he was a terrific player, for sure.
Lou?
It was real early in my lifetime, but I became a Cleveland Brown fan when I watched the Browns play with Leroy Kelly just after Jim Brown. The thing that I remember about Jim Brown is that there was no side shift. It was straight ahead, and if you were in his way, he's going to run you over. And that's the one thing that you really got to admire about him over the running backs of this era, is that they try to avoid you as much as possible, and he just ran right through you. He didn't care how big you were or whether you were in his way or not.
Yeah, great college career at Syracuse. Always gets in the discussion as one of the great college football players of all time. In the discussion as one of the great football players of all time. A lot of people rank him as number one in NFL history. Certainly his passing. My personal Jim Brown story. Listen to this one. I was talking to Dominic Velascura yesterday at Alta Infinity. It was hard to believe it had been since the late 90s, over 25 years ago. I'd invited to play golf at the National by my good friend Dominic Velascura, and we'd finished the round. We went down to the bar there to grab a few pops, as Don Cherry would say, and we walked in, and who was sitting in the corner? Jim Brown. And I was just taken aback. I go, Jim Brown is here playing golf in Toronto, and he's there. And I looked over at Dominic. I said, what do we do? And he said, what, are you crazy? We're going to go get his autograph. I says, I got nothing. I got no pen. I got nothing. So Dominic grabbed the napkin, and I grabbed a chit. You know those chits when you're just a National Golf Club of Canada chit. And we just walked over to Jim Brown. He was sitting in the corner. And
so did he end up paying the bill?
No, he didn't end up paying the bill. And I'm sure the member paid for Jim Brown. And Jim Brown was wearing his usual toque, his usual hat. And we walked. I was with much trepidation. I mean, he was big and strong. And I said, I didn't want to bother him on his personal time. But Dominic, who was relentless, said, no, we're going to go. So Dominic grabs a napkin. I grab a chit. So, Mr. Brown, will you sign this? Absolutely. And nicest guy. We chatted with him for about a couple of minutes. And unfortunately, it was the day before iPhones. If it had been today's date, I would have grabbed my iPhone out. We would have taken a picture with him. He was just friendly with us, you know. Gave us the time, and that's my Jim Brown story. Who would have thunk I would have just walked into a change room bar and there's sitting in the corner in Toronto is Jim Brown. But like I said, we've always done tribute shows when the legends of the past have passed on. So certainly our fond remembrances of Jim Brown, like I said, we can't sugarcoat certain issues in his personal life that, you know, that, you know, were controversial. But he was an advocate for social justice, put together a team in the late 1960s, Muhammad Ali, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I believe some of the guys from the Mexico City Olympics, Tommy Smith and John Carlos, and some of those. He advocated for social justice his entire life, and one of the great football players of all time. We wish him rest in peace.
Rest in peace, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Gentlemen, we haven't been able to get hold of Butch this morning, so you know what? We didn't finish our Toronto Maple Leafs discussion.
Are we going back to that? Okay.
Yeah, you want to go back to that, or you want to talk some basketball? You know,
how about Jays?
I don't want to talk about the Jays. They're not doing very well, Lou. Who wants to talk about the Jays?
Go ahead, Lou. You got something you want to say about the Jays?
I checked the standings. I checked the standings this morning. They're in last place.
The problem they have then and the problem they had last year is their bullpen. Mr. Jordan Romano blew another one yesterday, so yeah. I'm going to throw some more fire on there.
Yeah, certainly. That didn't pan out too well yesterday, but
Manoa
and then on top
too.
Of that, Schneider pulls his, doesn't know it's a second visit to the mound and pulls Manoa up.
Oh, my God.
Hey, Lou, these things happen.
Only in Toronto.
These things happen. It's not, you know, not the end of the world. You know, Manoa was, not that he was having a bad game. I think he only had given up two hits at that point in time, if I'm not mistaken, but probably having one
he
of his better games.
He finally comes out of a slump, and then that happens.
And that happens. Mm-hmm. And, they're talking to Schneider after. They had to bleep him out a few times at the press conference after the game. Certainly, we'll keep an eye on the Jays. It's, you know, they've had an up and down season so far. But going back to the Leafs, guys, you're the general manager. Lou, you're going to get hired as the general manager this week. You've got some decisions to make. And probably the most important one is Austin Matthews. I don't think Tavares is going anywhere. And then there's some discussion about Nylander and Marner breaking up the core. All kinds of, you know, I guess everything's on the table. There is a sense that certain changes have to be made. You don't want to stay static. But you're the general manager, Lou. Brendan Shanahan calls you tomorrow morning or Tuesday morning, says, Lou, we need a guy of your stature and your caliber. What are you going to do?
Sit down with Matthew's representatives, find out what kind of ballpark that that you're looking at. I always say that you build your strength down the middle. Try to get him signed if it's viable as soon as possible in a long-term extension. And then put feelers out for Nylander and Marner. The first team I would call would be Anaheim because they got a bunch of young prospects, and find out what the availability of Drysdale, McTavish, Zegras, and maybe even their second pick overall this year to find out exactly where they stand on Marner.
Naz?
Lou, Mitch Marner is the guy you're targeting? Or would it not be Matthews?
You need strength down the middle, and I'm not saying Matthews is not. If he comes in with a ridiculous number, then I would put feelers out there. Okay, guys, listen, we're going to take offers on Austin Matthews. We'll take offers on all three, really, because they've July 1st, they're going to have us over a barrel, even though Nylander's got a 10-team no-trade list. And then you're not going to be able to trade Marner for 2 years, so he can more or less have a great season and then go through the playoffs walking into sleep. So
have we all come to the conclusion? You have to sign Matthews. You got to figure out a way. He's the key.
I'm hearing they're going to go 3 years. Well, they're here 3 years
for Matthews.
Yeah, bridge contract.
Well, they got to get him. Unless, like, I just can't see getting equivalent value back for Austin Matthews. No. I mean, I think that ship sailed shelled a long time ago. You've built your team around this guy. You've
got to
have
3 years.
You
got to
have a number one center. He's one of the top five players in the league. You know, let's call a spade, you can criticize him. I think he was playing injured in the playoffs. He had some good looks in the playoffs too. He's the guy, you know, if you're going to go to the promised land, he's the guy that's going to take you there.
He's not going to get $15 million for sure.
Well, I think
what they're saying, right? But $15 million is way.
Well, he's going to get what his agent's able to get for him.
He's going to get a dollar less than McDavid gets right now. That's what he's going to get.
McKinnon the highest paid player now at 12.6?
McKinnon's first and then McDavid.
I think Austin Matthews, his agent, is looking to be, he's going to be the highest paid player in the league. Until the next go round, Makar or McDavid or whomever else has to get their contracts renegotiated. But how much of this comes down to money, Lou? And how much, I'm talking about Matthews, how much of this comes down to money and how much of it comes down to he actually doesn't want to move on to another market?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with money. But if he doesn't hear the what he wants, he'll say, okay, listen, I don't want to sign. Let's take it July 1st. Let's negotiate the whole year. And if he's not happy with who they bring in as a coach, he might walk at the end of the year.
Why would he sign now? Doesn't he have more leverage next year?
Yes and no. He always got the injury aspect.
Yeah.
Right?
You want certainty.
And at the end of the year, he can more or less be available to 31 other teams. You look at L.A., you look at New York, who probably...
Because right now he's only negotiating with the Leafs. In a year, as time goes by, he's going to be negotiating with 31 other teams.
Well, no, he's going to negotiate with the Leafs till
July,
July 1st of 24.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay.
But then the Leafs have lost a significant amount of leverage on July 1st, right?
That's right. So they're going to lose a lot of leverage on Marner because you won't be able to trade him for 2 years. And you're also going to lose leverage on Nylander because there's going to be a 10-team no-trade list. And
okay, so we keep talking about we have to move one of the core four, and I think we've come. I think reasonable people can suggest Austin Matthews is not on that list, and neither is John Tavares, just because because of his contract.
Yeah.
And they've got to find a different role for him. So at the end of the day, if we're going to split up the so-called core four, we're talking about Marner and Nylander. Okay, so let's take a step back.
Nylander's
here. Why are we split?
$7 million, though, Wally.
What's that?
Nylander's only making $7 million.
Now.
So how can you get rid of him?
For now, he's only making $7 million.
Yeah, he's worth.
Yeah, but you got to think down the road as well. But what's the theory about why we have to split up the core four? Why are we trading Nylander or why are we trading Marner? For what purpose, Lou?
Well, because 5 years of the same crew, you're going to need. Different taste in the dressing room at the start of the year. Again, Gretzky got dealt. I saw Mike Gartner get dealt from Washington. He was in there. Remember, he had 13 years of 30 goals or more. Dale Hunter got traded from Quebec to Washington. You never thought he would be traded.
Wendell Clark.
So you've got to put a different look in the dressing room.
Who else is not coming back? Let's forget about the core four. You got, I can't remember the amount of UFAs you have on the Leafs, but right now they have about $20 million in cap space. And then you got to start signing people. So let's have a look at some of the other guys. How many of these outside the core four, how many of these guys are gone?
Hull.
Yeah.
Kerfoot.
Probably Kerfoot, probably Bunting, obviously Gustafson. Those are four main guys. Now, obviously, you're going to have to bring somebody back and sign them. Do you go out and sign O'Reilly on a short-term deal? If you do move one of the two right wingers.
I think you sign him if he's willing to come back.
I heard he's asking $5 million. I don't think that'll fit. They couldn't make.
Who, O'Reilly?
Yeah.
You don't think he's worth $5 million?
Oh, he's worth it. Yeah. I just don't know.
I can't see. I would thought he'd be worth more than that. Lou, is he worth more than $5
million? I think he's worth exactly what he's getting paid right now, seven and change. But is he going to be willing to sign for that here?
No, he ain't taking $5 million if somebody else can offer him seven. It's not going to happen.
Be careful, well, no, because he's 32, 33 years old. That's that time, you know. Like, how much can you sign him for?
Well, it's the term. Do you sign him for a three-year deal and $7 million a year?
Yeah, you're pretty safe at that, but you can't sign him for five.
No, you can't sign him for five. There's no, not the way he plays.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, then it's
okay.
Yeah.
So, and again, if the return is there, you're going to make the deal. If it's not there and teams are not willing to give up draft choices and their top young prospects, you're not going to make the deal.
We got about a minute and a half left. Lou, Florida Panthers.
Unbelievable.
Are they going to win the Stanley Cup?
They could.
They could. They play a simple, hard-nosed game.
I got to ask you, Lou. I was watching that overtime game the other night, and unfortunately I didn't make it into the fourth overtime period. It was a little bit past my bedtime during the middle of the week. You played in that six overtime marathon, didn't you, with the Islanders?
Four overtime period.
How many overtime periods?
Four.
Okay. What's it like for a player to play basically two games on the same night?
Very surreal. There's not much talk in the room in between periods. You just make sure that you don't get down on your liquids. There's lots of oranges. And really, you just sit back and relax. Not so much said between anybody. Let's just go out and take care of things and keep things as simple as possible. And in trouble, get the puck out over the blue line.
Was that the Pat LaFontaine game?
Yes, it was.
Oh. Yeah.
It was on Easter, and it ended on Easter Sunday, didn't it?
Yes, and if you go back into the archives, I had a so-called semi-breakaway with about 10 seconds left.
You got dragged down, yeah.
And I got taken down, and I'm looking back, boy, imagine in this era, I would have had a penalty shot.
Anyways, guys, the producer is giving me the get off the air sign. We'll carry on the discussion next Sunday. Lou, thank you so much for joining us. Naz, as always, the last word.
Have a good week, everybody, and we'll see you next week. And go Blue Jays, despite what Louis says.
And go Corey Connors. Have a great week, everyone. We'll be back again next Sunday morning.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.